Welcome to the Sexual Healing Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Pookie. On this show, we talk about all those fun things in life, typically sexual healing, health, wellness, from my perspective as a black, same-gender loving cis man in my 40s, and on the latter half of them bitches, I might add. Want to thank everyone for coming in. If this is a return visit, thanks for coming back. If this is your first time, welcome in. First up, if you feel so inspired to live tweet, the hashtag for the show is Sexual Healing Pod. Appreciate any commentary you might have. Of course, you can always visit my DMs on Twitter, which is DocTorPouQuie. And to all subscribers, I thank you. Always looking for new subscribers, folks to rate the podcast, particularly an Apple Podcast, to get the word out there and raise the profile of the show. And we appreciate all reviews, past, present, and future. So definitely we appreciate the love over here, and a brother's just trying to get it out there. So the summer continues. We have had a little bit of a warm-up over here on the West Coast, along with a little earthquake here and there, and I guess a couple thousand aftershocks. We felt some of them here, not a whole lot, because I believe the epicenter was a good two-hour drive from where I live on the coast, but we could definitely feel the main one and then some of the bigger aftershocks. So definitely, you know, sending out heartfelt thoughts and prayers to the folks out in Ridgecrest, and I cannot remember the name of the town right next to Ridgecrest, which has been really quite devastated because there weren't a lot of resources out there in the first place. So, you know, we all have natural disasters. They just vary by where we live. Over here, we get the earthquakes, and that's just what it is. But it's actually been pretty quiet seismically, so we're allegedly, you know, if you subscribe to the odds, we're due for some activity over here. So hopefully it's not too severe, and certainly that it's not lethal or fatal to our fellow San Angelinos or whatever it's called. I am quite raspy today, quite tired and crazy. It's just been one hell of a week thus far, and it's only Wednesday. So I have a question for you. With it being summer, I just wonder if you are loving you hard. You know, are you getting enough sleep, eating lots of fruits and vegetables, drinking your water so that skin, that black, that lovely melanin shield that we have, that it's not cracking? Are you effectively managing your coins? Because, you know, again, financial distress can be a mental health issue. So are you taking care of all that stuff? Practicing that self-love and that self-care? Though that's one of the main questions of the show, and it's what inspires me to keep coming back each week and sharing information with you. So I'll go ahead and do my check-in, and before we get into our main topic for the day. And 2019 has been kind of like a trauma unit, mass unit in my life. Started the year ill and in the hospital a couple of times. Almost checked out of this piece a couple of times. I fainted and fell out a couple of times, and it's just been, it has been a journey. So apparently my ass is starting to get old, as my doctor said to me the other day. She's like, well, you know, you are starting to age and stuff happens. And I said, yeah, stuff happens, but how many folks my age just falling out and shit? And, you know, trying to get across the street and almost taking a header on Sunset Boulevard. That's just insane. But okay. You know, I let it slide and I'll do what I can. But despite, you know, this ongoing process of recovering and healing and just, you know, the assorted setbacks and aches and lightheaded moments, I'm still here, still in the game. And I'm definitely building some resiliency through all these struggles. You know, they're happening for a reason, and this is my season for them. On a happier note, my mother had surgery this morning, and she is home, in bed. I just heard her coughing, so she is recuperating. They gave her some good drugs, so she'll be out for most of the day into the evening. But everything went well, despite me getting sick earlier this week, where just I was into bed most of the day yesterday, because I didn't really fall asleep until almost a quarter to seven, I believe, because I was just up in digestive distress, which my doctor said is just part of the recovery process. And so, we've been kind of trying to get the house ready, with her impending surgery and just making it easier for her to recover and recuperate, which, in other words, really means that we put some focus, time, and attention into unpacking and consolidating our households because we still have way too much stuff for the space that we have. I believe that either of us alone could have filled up the space we live in now. And imagine two of us bringing all of our stuff together and both of us being insanely busy. We are still unpacking, and we are now in our, I want to say, second or third year here. So it's quite tragic. But that's just the reality, of our shared existence. But tomorrow's not promised, but we hope that it shows up, and that we're there to enjoy it. Send a prayer our way. Eventually we'll get it together around here, but it has been a long, slow slog to get this house together. And I suspect that we'll probably get it together right around the time we're ready to move. Because we are, taking our collective and cooperative economics to another level and hopefully buying a new place soon. Possibly triplex, quadruplex, we'll see. But yeah. So, getting into our main topic, a lot of the things I've been talking about lately have been really inspired by what's been showing up in my DMs on Twitter. There's been ongoing conversation with myself and a couple of folks about, some of the leading topics of the day. One of the things last week was just talking about transgender folks, gender nonconforming, non-binary, our siblings that are not cisgender, and just the myriad of issues that they face, a lot of things that we as cis folks, regardless of our sexual orientation, really aren't aware of. We just don't get it because it's not part of our experience. And I've gotten a good amount of feedback from folks within the non-cis community, as I'll use as an umbrella. And some of them have, been like, stay out of our business in terms of weighing in on, some Twitter wars and Instagram infernos going on out there. And, I get their point, but there have been others that have said, thank you for at least reminding all of us about the fact that we are family and that even though we might circle the wagons when we need to, we really do tear one another apart on a regular basis. And it takes something really big for us to collectively get our shit together and really support one another. So, it's kind of in the weeds one way or the other. But, last week I answered the question of, someone said, who would date a trans man? And potentially marry a trans man. And I basically said anyone who's interested in said trans man, regardless of what you perceive, the trans man's genitalia to be, he is a man. He sees himself that way. He carries himself in that way. And we're hoping, and he's hoping that, he will be experienced that way as well and treat it with that respect that comes with being a fully realized person. So that conversation will be ongoing. I've been talking to a couple of folks and hope to bring that to you in a more nuanced conversation with some folks from our, from some of our non-cis siblings out there. Because I do think that the message really needs to come primarily from those folks, not from us that are cisgender. They're just, like I said, they're just things we will not understand because we have not lived it. Those of us that are non-heterosexual, we've obviously lived some of our stuff that may overlap with some of our non-cis siblings, but it's still a different ball of wax. And really, when you talk about LGBT and Q, you know, the T is really the undiscovered frontier, so to speak, for so many of us. There's an expectation, there's a perception that we are in allyship with one another, and that we're supporting our T siblings. And in some cases, we're falling well short of that. We just are. So that conversation, those conversations need to be had. I hope to bring you a spectrum of voices from different places, different perspectives, and just different beliefs and attitudes and philosophies. So, you know, like I said, if you want to have those conversations, reach out to me, Dr. Pookie on Twitter. You can also reach out via email at sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. Definitely want to hear from you. Questions, topics, comments, concerns. If you want to come on and talk, let's do it. Reach out to it, brother. I'm here. You know, part of health and wellness is all of us kind of recognizing those places where we intersect and really helping one another along our life path, because that path is rough enough from folks on the outside. We don't need to make it more difficult for one another. So, one of the more recent things that I've gotten in my DMs on Twitter was a message from someone basically saying, well, this is what he wrote to me. He said, I've been wondering about the reactions of so many folks about the boy sucking some dick in the sanctuary of his father's church. As an atheist, and a black one at that, a church sanctuary inspires no reverence in me aside from my appreciation of the stained glass windows and the architecture. I got into an argument with a friend of mine because I did not share his outrage over the, quote, great desecration, unquote, that the videos and the act itself inspired in him. Am I wrong for not seeing this as a big deal? And, you know, I really thought about the question. And of course, my immediate reaction was, it's not a simple yes or no question, because, you know, I think in terms of for you personally, no, you're not wrong in not seeing it as a big deal in the sense of this was a religious space on a hallowed ground, particularly if you do not share those religious beliefs. But I do think there needs the nuance in that conversation, though, is the fact that the space that this allegedly happened in was reverent and hallowed ground for some, particularly those that identify as Christian. I suspect that folks who are Catholic, who are Protestant, who are Jewish, who are, you know, any holy space or sacred space, folks engaging in illicit sexual activity and having the audacity to put it on camera would be a bit disconcerting, if not downright off-putting. So I can certainly understand why your friend might be upset, as it sounds like they are likely a Christian, possibly Baptist, Kojic, or something along those lines. I could see why they would be really quite unsettled by this. I know my reaction was struck me as really kind of odd, because on one hand, I kind of didn't really go completely overboard with the outrage about it being in a sanctuary and it being sacrilegious. I really kind of went to the side of this young man, what motivated him to do this? How is he coping with, you know, all of this coming out? Because I had heard that he was very distraught and suicidal. I'm hoping, I've not seen anything about his death or anything along those lines. So I'm hoping that he's able to bounce back from this, that he's okay. However, I think the other larger issue is also this idea that we all have different perspectives, and we have different religious perspectives and theological leanings, even within a particular denomination. You could have two people sitting next to one another in the same church and have slight variations in what they believe and how their religion plays out in your life, how it manifests, how they represent it, how they practice it. All those things are very individual. At the same time, you know, I could certainly understand why folks were decidedly dismayed by what they saw as very overt and disrespectful sexual behavior in a church sanctuary, particularly as you are the potential folks that practice in that house of worship. So, you know, there are two sides to this issue, possibly a third, you know, many sides, to be honest with you. And, you know, as I thought about it, this conversation about the sexual behavior being practiced in that space, there are also folks out there that would have taken great offense to the sexual behavior being practiced pretty much anywhere. Which kind of led me to this topic of sex positivity, which is something that is growing as part of our discourse, you know, culturally. It's being talked about more. And, you know, the thing about sex positivity, it's something that I've heard over the years, and I kind of took it as just being positive about human sexuality. But not really giving it, you know, in my sense, you know, I just kind of took the term as a very literal thing and didn't put a whole lot of study into it to figure out, well, what exactly is sex positivity? Let's map the boundaries of what this is, what it means, who does it apply to? If it, you know, does it have restrictions? Is it the domain of a particular segment of the population? Who does this belong to? And basically, you know, when I started doing the research, I found that a lot of the most easily reached and assessed or accessed information was woman-centered and or directed toward femmes. And that makes sense because, you know, from what I could tell, sex positivity emerged out of the feminist movement, out of feminist thought and womanist thought, conscious initiatives. This idea of being very overt in removing misogyny or hatred of women, misandry or hatred of men, patriarchy, which is a nice loaded thing of male privilege and domination over non-male persons or non-heterosexual male persons in a lot of cases, as that's been expanded, and sexism. Just removing these four elements along with other allied things or adjacent things from women's sexuality and expression of their sexuality. And so that kind of made sense because you have this idea of women's sexuality being monitored, being determined, being limited by power that many men wield. If we look at some of the recent reproductive abortion, birth control rulings and policies, whether it be in our government, at the federal, state, county, local levels, or whether it be in a lot of our religious denominations, there are certain restrictions and things imposed on women's bodies and what they can do with them, whether it be the idea of being free enough to embrace your sexuality and practice your sexuality, or if you do practice it and you end up getting pregnant, having the choice to terminate that pregnancy if you're not ready for it or you simply do not want it. And, you know, we're seeing attacks on Roe versus Wade in the United States. And, you know, we're headed toward most likely a showdown in the Supreme Court where I don't know what's going to happen, truth be told. I mean, it's some scary shit. Now, as someone who's not a dad and who doesn't have a uterus or a womb that, you know, anything's growing in, I feel like a lot of it's just none of my damn business. But there are women in my life that do have those things, and there are policies out there and initiatives that are seeking to restrict these women's choices. And I think given that these women, many of them are African American, and looking at the increased death rate for women, black women, during pregnancy as well as labor and delivery. You know, it can be dicey. I just watched a video yesterday of a gentleman, a widower, who he lost his wife in childbirth, basically. No, she did deliver, and she had a complication, and they basically, you know, she came in, and he's like, you know, my wife ran marathons, and she went in like the picture of health, delivered our child, and, you know, first one was fine, the second one, you know, it went okay, but there was some post-delivery issues, and, you know, they said they were going to do a CT scan on her at around, I think it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and they ended up not doing a CT scan until 10 o'clock that night, and when they finally got around to doing it, there was like an obscene amount of blood that had collected in one of her internal body cavities, and she died. And, you know, they basically had said to this man that his wife was just not a priority for them. And so this is a healthy black woman who was likely middle class, if not upper middle class. I would say they were comfortable. This was not, you know, this was a highly educated woman. This was not a woman who didn't have prenatal care. She did all the things she was supposed to do. And she still had these post-delivery complications. You look at a world-class athlete like Serena Williams, had these complications and, you know, and nearly died. And, you know, you got Serena Williams basically saying to her doctor, like, hey, I am susceptible to blood clots. You need to check on this. This is not, I don't feel right. This is what I believe is happening. And they even ignored her and she damn near died. So I say all this to say that control, women having control and agency over their bodies and whether they become mothers or not is really far more important than we realize, because it's not just this argument that some people make that women are using abortion and the day after pill and all these different things as a birth control method as opposed to practicing quote unquote responsible sexuality. Some people define that as having sex only in the context of marriage for procreation. And I have to reject that idea, because if it were just that utilitarian, fucking wouldn't feel as good as it does. It just wouldn't, you know, it makes no sense to me that sex would feel that great. And it's just something you're supposed to do to have all these, you know, physiological changes and this person growing inside of you and this really painful and in some cases, you know, really traumatizing delivery that you have to endure. I feel like sex should have a little more purpose to it than that. And certainly given that it does, I feel like it, you know, that shouldn't be the end all be all. That I feel like sex is just one of those gifts that we've received as part of our humanity, and it's to be celebrated, and just, you know, yeah, it's to be celebrated. So that is the essence of sex positivity, this idea that, as you know, trying to define it, it's a very individual thing, but very generally, sex positivity is a perception of all healthy and explicitly consensual, very key there, healthy as well as explicitly consented to sexual activity and expressions. All those things are positive, regardless of whether you like it or not. Sex positivity is all about embracing your sexual desires and accepting the sexual desires of others, not necessarily doing them per se. If that's not what floats your boat, if that's not your party, that's not your lane, that's not your ministry, no one's saying you have to do things that other people are doing. But sex positivity means you don't yuck someone else's yum. Okay? It's this adage of, if you like it, I love it. I love it for you. It's not for me. But I love it for you. And as I often like to say, if I encounter someone and they're very frank about their sexual interests and proclivities and what works for them and what excites them, what turns them on, I really kind of celebrate the fact that they know. A lot of us do not know what really turns that crank. That sex is a full contact sport, but it involves all the senses, not just sight. Although men can be very visually stimulated creatures, it involves smell, it involves touch, taste, and all these other senses that are escaping my mind right now, but just like changes in temperature and things along those lines. Those are all part of sex and the senses. When you think about sex positivity and say you have someone that you know perhaps is in a polyamorous relationship, okay, which means that they are in love with more than one person at one time, and they are also potentially married to one individual, and they have a extradiatic partner, as I love that word, extradiatic, which basically means a partner outside of the duo. So the dyad or the duo, it's extradiatic. So it's a third person that they may be involved with sexually, or a third and a fourth, you know, also known as a throuple or a quad. And these folks could all be living together. They could be in an exclusive quad relationship where they're only having sex amongst the four of them in various combinations that, you know, meet their fancy. There could be, and you know, polyamorous relationships run the gamut. It's not to say that everybody is fucking everybody. It's possible that you have two people that are married to one another, but they also are very much committed to, each of them has an additional partner that they are very much committed to, and that could be a boyfriend, girlfriend, or just non-gender conforming partner. Or mate, and perhaps those other two people outside of the marriage dyad, they might at some point meet and be like, oh, I'm into you too. And suddenly you have a quad relationship. Now, not everyone may be under the same roof, but say you are a person that is very much, I'm a one person at a time kind of person. Okay, I can't be messing with multiple penises, multiple vaginas, you know, licking on more than two nipples. I can't do it. That's okay. And the person who's polyamorous with three other partners may say to you, oh, okay, well, that's cool. I'm happy. That is it working for you? Are you satisfied? Are you happy? Is this the full extent of your sexuality? Are you, you know, engaging in healthy behavior for yourself? Is it affirming? Okay. Oh, you like it? I love it. Period. But sex positivity also means that you cannot then turn around and stigmatize and criticize that person for having more partners or doing something differently than what you do. Okay. So it is that idea of not yucking someone else's yum. So one of the things that comes out of sex positivity is one of the great things is that it really takes shame. This concept of shame, which is just, it can be devastating and quite traumatizing. It takes that out of your sexual thoughts as well as your expressions. It allows you to just practice your behavior freely and to derive the enjoyment out of it that's intended. If you're in relationship with other people, whether it be strictly a sexual one or there is an emotional component, if y'all make it legal or if it's a friends with benefits, whatever it is, being sex positive is likely going to lead to greater openness in that relationship. It's going to make your communication much more effective, but it also lays a good solid foundation for a healthier intimate relationship. Now, whether that intimacy involves sexual contact is another issue altogether. Intimacy can be, you know what, this is my platonic friend and we talk to one another about stuff that we don't talk with other people about. You know, I had went to a concert and had lunch with a friend this past weekend. And you know, we're sitting there having lunch and somehow we got on the topic of just past sexual activities and ways of being. And it was a very fascinating conversation, because at a certain point, you know, I was just very open. I'm just kind of talking about some past experiences and how I, you know, what my sexuality looked like back in my late teens into my early 20s, mid 20s, late 20s, early 30s. And it was kind of surprising to me, because it was very frank. And certainly, you know, the person I'm speaking with is one of my closest friends, so of course I should be able to talk with him about that. But I also kind of noted this is something we hadn't talked about in this way, where it's been a very clear conversation where we're just sitting there and just kind of vibing and talking about stuff and saying, yeah, I never really had the hardcore hoe phase, or, you know, my hoe phase looked like this, and, you know, and just the values that came out of that, and what did you take from it, and how did you go into it? And it just kind of reinforced for me that, you know, this person is a really good friend, because once I got past the initial, I'm like, well, I'm just telling all my business today, which is not like I haven't told it, but I hadn't been that frank in my sexual conversations with this particular friend before. We've talked about sex, but not just hardcore in that way. And so it was just really fascinating to have that conversation with him and kind of see where he was coming from. And I think for him to see, you know, where I'm coming from and where I've been and what I'm looking forward to now. Because I do think that those are really important. And if you're not talking with your friends about that kind of thing, then who are you talking to? Your sexuality is a very important part of who you are. It doesn't define you, but it's a really important part. So, you know, it also inspired me to do some writing, where I realized that in some regards, when I thought about overtly asking myself, am I sex positive? What does this mean? Exactly, you know, as opposed to, well, it means you're positive about sex. What does it mean? And does that label, so to speak, or does that mindset apply to me? And I realized that in some regards, I am pretty sex positive. And in others, I'm not. Not as sex positive as I thought. And it was really a thing for me where I didn't say, oh, I need to work on this, as much as I really kind of interrogated it, because on one level, theoretically, philosophically, you like it, I love it. Are you safe? You know, is it affirming your health? Okay, great. I'm happy that it's working for you. That really is where I am. But I also noticed that in some situations when, you know, someone's sex positivity was kind of infringing upon my space, that was a problem. And so I had to really interrogate, was I being truly sex positive? And I mean, in some regards, no, I was not. I just wasn't being nearly as sex positive as I thought I was. You know, so that was something that I definitely felt like, okay, I need to do some work around this. And I'm doing it. And I think part of this conversation, you know, today, or just this topic, is really important, because as I said, you know, the stuff that kind of emerges in my head tends to be the things that I talk about on the show. And I realize that Black same gender loving folks, we have this really curious, interesting relationship to our sexuality, to our sexual expression, not even orientation, but just our sexuality, just the expression of sex, period. Because we have this really interesting, I call it a curious intersection of ethnicity, of religion and theology, historical impression and historical oppression and stereotyping of our sexuality, you know, the Venus Hottentot, the Black Buck, the just, you know, this voracious Black male sexuality, you know, the Mandingo, the proliferation of the BBC or Big Black Cock and a lot of gay porn, you know, the homo thug, all these things are all parts of this sexual thing for us, whether we accept those stereotypes and the beliefs that we've been taught in the church house from our childhood and adolescence and possibly our adulthood. And then the last factor there is also particularly for, well, actually, I won't say just particularly for men, gender expression. you know, the construction of masculinity and femininity and how those things commingle within a person, and how we go through life, how we're able to walk through it. You know, how do you, as a male-identified person, perform your masculinity? And I use that word perform because our behavior, whether we are conscious of it or not, it shifts depending on the context that we're in. Our language, our body language, all those things can change. And so, you know, I was listening to an interview or a roundtable on Grapevine TV on YouTube, which is an awesome series. If you're not aware of it or watching it, look up Grapevine TV. They talk about, it's just like African-American, folks of African descent from the diaspora as a collective, talking about a range of issues, progressive versus conservative ideals, abortion. The one that really kind of triggered some thoughts about performance masculinity was certainly the discussion about, is masculinity under assault? Or is black masculinity under assault? And I didn't finish the episode because, you know, life popped up and I think I had to drag some boxes out to the garage or something like that. And so I didn't get back to it. And so it just, to me, it was very fascinating to hear this conversation. And I thought about it. You do have these warring camps about, is black masculinity under assault? Is black manhood, you know, being stripped away? Is it being replaced by femininity, particularly as it relates to non-heterosexual black men, as it relates to trans and gender non-conforming men, women, folks along the gender continuum spectrum? You know, just the idea of a binary being thrown out the window is very off-putting to, you know, a good number of folks out there. And so that was, you know, really what I thought about and how all those things came together. And I kind of said to myself, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of material out there talking about this idea of sex positivity and how it applies to the lives of black same gender loving folks. Certainly speaking for myself as a same gender loving black man, you know, who's cisgender, I didn't see a lot out there. You know, maybe one or two pieces, and they weren't really on the head. And I mean, I just have to wonder, has the material not been written yet? Have I not come across it? Because sometime, you know, Sister Google, she doesn't always give you what you want when you ask for it, because Boolean searches are an adventure. So perhaps tomorrow I'll do a search and I'll come across it. But in preparing for today's show, I didn't come across a lot. I wondered, how can we, as black same gender loving folks, or pansexual folks, who are of African descent, you know, with that those shades of skin that, you know, that identify us as black, how can we embrace sex positivity? How can we incorporate it into our existence? Because I do think that, you know, what we've grown up with hearing in the church, the cultural norms and a lot of the secrecy around our sexuality has made it very difficult to be sex positive. So I went out there foraging for information and I came across a couple of things. And one of the articles that really jumped out at me was a May 2018 article by Eva Taylor Grant that was posted on Bustle.com. And I'll be sure to include the URL in the show notes. I get a little raggedy about that sometimes, so I'm actually going to copy the URL now because it's not in my show script here, and so I want to make sure that I have it. So when I release this thing, everything's in one place. It's much easier to get all this truly together if I don't have to go looking for stuff. So there, it's there now, and she offered 8 pieces of advice to be more sex positive even when people around you are not terribly sex positive, if not downright sex negative. And the majority of the imagery in this article was of women of varying shades, particularly African-American women. And so I found that very fascinating. And so I felt like, okay, it at least It's being mindful, hopefully, and they didn't just pick pictures of black folks, but that because the images that are represented here are featuring us, that it may have some of our sensibilities as part of the article. So the first piece of advice that Ms. Grant gives is first to examine your feelings. And, she kind of codifies that by saying, if you've decided to change your perspective on sex, you have to start with yourself. When it comes to sex positivity, there's a lot to unpack, so it's best to figure out what your innate biases or perspectives are. So basically, she's saying get in touch with your feelings and your reactions to the diversity of sexual activity out there. Now there are just certain things that we may or may not be aware of that we may encounter and be like, oh, hell no, that's not for me. Ooh. Okay, it's not for you. Happy that you know that. If you're not able to get to a place where you say it's not for you and you don't have a value judgment attached to that or some sort of attached to it, that's some of that work that you need to do. That's part of that examination. You need to get to the bottom of why are you feeling the way that you do? What's driving that? Who is it? A sex educator, Lola Jean, or Jean, is quoted in the article saying, you can start to find out, as if for the first time, why you like what you like and how you view sex in the bigger picture. This is a critical building block for anyone, but especially powerful in a sex-negative environment. You'll need to know what your thoughts are. Oh, you'll need to know that your thoughts are your own, not anybody else's. Okay? So, put it down on paper and make it actionable. And so, the next step there is to, number two, know that there is no one way to be sex positive. Your way of embodying sex positivity may be very different from someone else's. You may have a very positive attitude about what you do, and you're totally okay with it, but you could be very much don't ask, don't tell with other people in your life. You don't want to know. Okay? And so, the thing is, you don't have to practice sex positivity the way that other people are doing it or that the way people say you are. It's really a personal journey. And it's figuring out what it means for you. And so, as she says here, she quotes Kayla Bakke, or Back, says that sex positivity isn't just about free love. It's a societal drive to develop further away from an oppressive and antiquated outlook on sex. Okay? So, it's all about cultivating a holistic approach to sex that enriches your intimacy, like I said, and destigmatizes non-normative sexual behavior. So basically, it takes the yuck out of someone else's yum. I personally am not into certain things. One of the things that comes up for me is water sports. I'm not into it. And I recall being exposed to it once at a sex club in a very, in your nostrils kind of way. It was a very large play space in LA, and I was there maybe a good 9-10 years ago, and I was just like, oh my god, the urine, the smell of this urine is wearing me out. It just bugged me. And to me, it wasn't so much like, I can't believe you're letting someone pee on you, so on and so forth, as much as I was like, oh, this smells pissy, this is not very sanitary. And so I had to really kind of get past my yuck with the smell and the fact that someone else is really enjoying this yuck, and the fact that this smell, as much as it might repulse me, it is turning someone else the fuck on. And so that was one of those things that I had to realize, like, wow, okay, I'm not as sex positive as I believe myself to be. One of those things that a lot of people, that's fairly universally yucked, would be something like scat play or blood play. But those two things, it's a wide catalog. It's stuff that people do with scat as well as with blood. And for some people, it is highly erotic. And for many people, it is far from erotic. It is the furthest thing from it. And therein lies the challenge of sex positivity. It's okay for you to say, you know, that's not part of my sexual practice. It's not part of my catalog. It's not how I get down. But if it is for someone else, being sex positive means, you know, celebrating them for embracing it, well, knowing, discovering it and embracing it for themselves and being fulfilled, and that they're practicing it in a healthy manner with someone who is explicitly consented to that sexual behavior. Okay. It's not saying you have to be all up in it and you know, they're sitting there doing blood play and you know, you have to sit there and watch it. No, it's just saying if someone you know, and that's part of their, you know, of their sexual catalog, that's how they like to play. Part of being sex positive is basically being able to hold the space for someone that may want to mention that to you and not making them feel like, oh, I'm being judged. Or if you and this person do kind of share personal details of your sexual lives and it's not this, you know, it's kind of like a thing of this is your best friend and they're sharing something with you that they found like that really turned them to hell on, it was unexpected, and they're really kind of sharing a bit of joy. That's what they're doing. They're not trying to gross you out or anything like that. They're basically trying to share a very intimate and very joyous part of themselves because they don't see it the way you do. Okay? So the third tip that Ms. Grant offers here is that you find new ways to value yourself. So she says the shame comes from the outside in. And although there's no way to become impermeable to what's around you, there are ways to build yourself up. Okay, so basically the coach again, the life coach or the relationship coach, Baki, basically says, you know, a good way to maintain sexual positivity when others around you aren't is to learn not to value yourself by external measures. So not succumbing to this expectation that you conform in some way. You have to overcome that tendency to march by the prevailing beat. You have your own beat, your own rhythm. You can turn the beat around. It's up to you to find out what it is and to put it out there. And part of that is going to be understanding that some people may be directly or indirectly shaming you by their reaction to what you do. But part of the way that you counter that is to build your self-esteem in what you do and what your sexuality and the expression of it means to you. The fourth thing that is offered here is start communicating openly. Okay, so basically it's talking about this idea of trying out open communication with your close friends or partners. Talk about sex, you know, like the conversation I had with my friend this past week. Talk about what you like and dislike, what you fear, how you feel, and any questions you might have. You know, it's interesting because in the article, you know, she makes the argument that our culture is simultaneously hypersexual, which it is, and sex negative. Like, at the same time, it's those two things. And a lot of it's contradiction. And so we're all vulnerable to this idea of wanting to be accepted and to be heard and be seen and be celebrated or at least respected. And so if those things are not available to you in the context of self-disclosure and being honored and accepted that way, then you might be more inclined to change your behavior to make yourself more acceptable. But the fifth thing that's recommended here by Grant is to find your allies, basically to find your tribe. And it would be great to have someone to confide in. It would be great if you found a life partner or a sexual partner that is just totally open and into what you want to do. If you're fortunate enough to be in that space, congratulations. But if you're not, you're going to need to have some folks that are peers that are sex positive. Maybe you can start a study group about what this means. There's reading you can do. There are roundtable conversations that you can have. All these things are part of this process of growing in your sex positivity. And so if you can't find or cultivate your tribe locally, then, you know, the sixth step that is recommended is to go online. You know, as I love she puts it, there's a lot of nonsense online, but there's also an incredible sex positive community. If you do your research, chances are the internet will be a major jumping off point for your sex positive identity. The reality is, one of the great things about anonymity online is that people can be very naked, very vulnerable about what they think, what they do, what they believe, and what it means to them. We see the negative side of that often is with people being trolls and with people being very expressing a lot of vitriol based on perhaps coming out of sexism, misogyny, misandry, homophobia, various prejudices, discrimination, you name it. We see those things. They've never gone anywhere. You know, the Klan may not be marching down every street or main street anymore, although they're making their comeback. But once upon a time, they weren't in the streets like they're trying to be again. Charlottesville would have been a major anomaly, and certainly wouldn't have been anything that big. But the climate now has brought them back out in the open. But the thing is, they never went anywhere online. They created their spaces where they could have their conversations that were a major part of their identities. Now, as a person who may not have a white nationalist, white supremacist worldview, you might find their spaces and their communication to be utter garbage, nonsense, so on and so forth. And that's your prerogative. But that's their yum. Now, I'm certainly not going to advocate that, you know, you co-sign on, you know, a white supremacist, white nationalist yum. I'm just using it as an example that this idea of being online, being as anonymous as you need to be until you feel comfortable enough and you're able to find your tribe and have those conversations and have those experiences or get the education and guidance that you need. That's the power of the internet and the power of anonymity. Because you could be talking to someone about some serious heavy stuff and they live 5 minutes away from you. You have no idea. You could be talking to somebody in Bosnia. Wait, does Bosnia still exist? Bosnia, Herzegovina? I can't. Okay. In a Baltic state, perhaps, or Eastern Europe, or, you know, some other place in the world other than down the street, or even within our borders. I got like a message from someone from like Kuwait asking me a question about, you know, is it true what they say about black men? And I said, well, what's being said? I played stupid because I felt like the question was absurd, but I did want to know, were you going to really tell me what was being said? Because you're asking me to answer this question, which is really problematic as fuck, but okay. What's being said? I'm gonna play stupid. I'm gonna make you say it. So then you recognize when I tell you no, how ridiculous the question was, and it's the stereotype. So the seventh piece of advice here, offered by Ms. Grant, is to find common ground when you can. You know, so having a different point of view from other folks can be, you know, rather conflictual. It can be a little traumatizing and isolating. You know, but you're not going to disagree on everything. I think all of us can agree that whatever it is that turns us on, and it's reinforcing behavior. So no matter how you might perceive it, it's something that brings someone else pleasure and joy and creates a favorable outcome that they're very much inclined to repeat again and again and again. It's how we learn and how we behave and interact with the world. If we do something and the outcome is positive, we're going to do it again. It's called reinforcement. Some fetishes, maybe not all, but some develop through the process of association. If there's like a certain smell that has been associated with you being sexually aroused, some people are drawn to, you know, smelly socks, feet, toes, locker rooms, markers, you name it. Just all these different things. Remember talking about the senses. Some people are aroused by pain. Those things were typically, in a lot of cases, learned through association or classical conditioning. Pavlov and a dog. That's where that stuff comes from in a lot of cases. Not all, but in a lot of cases. You know, when you talk about how did that come about? How did you learn that this finger is what turns you on? You know, or looking at this kind of porn turns you on. This kind of guy, this kind of woman turns you on. You know, how did you know that you were just incredibly drawn to trans men and didn't know it? Somehow you learned it. And it either was encoded in who you were, or perhaps you learned it through association, where you were able to link a particular person or a type of person or certain physical characteristics, certain aromas, you name it, to sexual arousal. We're all trying to get that nut. Whatever it takes, that's what you do. You claim that nut. Speaking of claiming your nut, eighth and final tip offered by Ms. Grant is to explore your own body. A lot of us, you know, some people that are sexually active with other people, they kind of devalue the idea of solo sex and exploration of your own body. It's vitally important that you don't stop learning and exploring what works for you. I can honestly say that what worked for me as a 16, 17-year-old does not turn, you know, it doesn't always turn my crank now. And certainly some of the things that I find myself drawn to now, I would have never considered back, you know, as a 22-year-old. But as a 46-year-old, I'm like, I might need to look into that shit. I might like it. I might not like it. But best believe, I'm going to try to find me some allies, and I'm going to go online to find my tribe and learn what I need to learn and possibly network and make connections. Find that common ground with people that can help me to explore my body and expand my mind. Because the biggest part of sex, it goes on in the brain, not the genitalia. It's a communication thing between the genitalia and your brain. So you might be able to talk yourself, or at least discover the pleasure that you get out of something that you might initially find to be really unpalatable and repulsive. You know, there are lots of things out there. You know, one of the things that it's really growing in popularity now is this idea of spitting in one another's mouths and on bodies and all these different things as part of sexuality. There are some people like, I can't get with it. Other people find it hot as hell. You won't know until you try it. And you won't know how to find people to try it with unless you get on out there in the flesh, in virtual communities, and find your tribe. Expand the scope of your yums. And hopefully you can reduce your yucks. Not things that you necessarily would do yourself, but that you're okay knowing that other people do, and you're not stigmatizing them for it. Because stigma and shame are some of the biggest boner killers and coochie dryers out there. Okay? It'll dry a cat up in a minute, and it'll make a hardest dick go limp. So try not to shame folks. All right. So now, one of the things that I thought about, you know, because when Tumblr late last year pulled a lot of their adult, you know, they basically said all the not safe for work content, when it got pulled off of their service, although you can still find a whole lot of adult content on there because the filters are not catching everything and it's just too much content for them to catch everything. But they're getting better. But you can still go on and get you some random dick and ass, and you'll be just fine. As a good friend of mine tells me on a regular basis, yeah, I still get stolen. So I'm like, oh, okay, I don't really go on there. Because a lot of my stuff, you know, that I had liked or saved or whatever, they done blocked it off. Talking about, you had a report that this was adult content. I was like, well, I'm a big boy. Shit, let me watch it. So now you had a mass migration. Like, where do you go for your not safe for work information, for your naughty bits, for your porn, for your filth, your everything else. And Let me wind that back a little bit. There was an article that I want to bring your attention. It was titled The Threeness, A Black Gay Man in America. And it was written by Dr. Derek Dangerfield, who's a postdoctoral fellow at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing in Baltimore. And he basically wrote, when talking about his experiences as a patient engaging medical care, he says, quote, "We need better clinical care and engagement for black sexual minority men. Men in this community often feel shame and guilt, and understandably fear that HIV infection is inevitable." And this is coming out of that CDC report that said one out of every two black men who have sex with men will be diagnosed with HIV within their lifetime, which is a staggering number. And it wasn't certainly a certainty, but it was basically said, hey, based on the current HIV infection rates and seroconversion rates amongst, you know, black men who have sex with men, this is where we're headed. So y'all need to get this shit together and do something about it. Okay, so going back to that, this understandable fear that HIV infection is inevitable. He goes on to say, other issues such as violence and stigma at being both a black man and a gay man are also salient for many black sexual minority men, and they impact healthcare engagement and health outcomes. Larger social issues such as internalized homonegativity, medical mistrust, and socioeconomic status impact healthcare engagement for many black gay men as well. So what he's basically saying there is kind of like a thread of what I've been talking about thus far, is this idea of sex negativity. It's this idea of going to or having a relationship with a medical provider and they have no idea that you engage in sexual activity with other men. Obviously, I think if you were trans or gender nonconforming, in some instances, you cannot hide that from your doctor, but they still may not know who you're having sex with. And because of, you know, sometimes just the fact that the majority of doctors are white men, many of them heterosexual, many of them cis, they don't always understand how to talk to folks that aren't like them. That the way they ask questions, or even the questions that they ask, could be off-putting, could be offensive, could be very shame-inducing for other folks. Being sex positive is being seen and being able to cast off that shame. And this is even in context beyond the sexual context. This is, you know, you're not going into the doctor's office to have sex with your doctor. You're going in to get medical care. You need to be able to communicate to them in a very positive and affirmative manner. Yeah, this is representative of my sexuality, and, you know, you shouldn't have shit else to say. Okay, have a good day. You know, I mean, that's what we're talking about here, and it's vitally important that you're able to do that. Okay, so in closing out the main topic today, there was an interesting article that I came across on The Advocate, I believe, and it was a compilation of 12 post-Tumblr spaces for sex-positive queer men. And of course, queer being that umbrella that encompasses the spectrum of, I guess, anything beyond a Kinsey 2 up to a 6, and then all the litany of sexual activities and identities that are part of that spectrum. So let me just kind of run through these 12 sites, because we've already eclipsed the 1 hour mark. So I'm way behind schedule on this. So I want to, you know, get moving here and respect some time. So what are some of those post-Tumblr spaces for the sex-positive queer man to visit? And this is an article by Alexander Chevis. And the first place that he references is Twitter. He says, where the porn and sex worker communities live for now. Because, you know, in addition to Tumblr getting shut down, you know, I believe the feds, they raided Rent Boy and shut it down. So you had folks wondering, where do I go now? Not only to pimp my wares, but to find my tribe. The second location, and you can find damn near anything on Twitter. Twitter is off the chain. A second location is Instagram, but they do have limitations. You can't be having your stuff hanging out and swinging and all this other stuff. Now, you can actually make your Instagram account private, such that, you know, you only let certain people see it, which would reduce, theoretically, the possibility of getting it reported and possibly suspended or shut down. But you take a risk on Instagram. A third location, just for fans, is basically, I love here, they say porn is dead, long live porn. And it's basically, you know, big time studio porn is really kind of on the decline. So you have people now making themselves into a studio. You have OnlyFans.com, where you can put up your activity and people can subscribe for a nominal monthly fee. You also have Just For Fans, and, you know, and I think Just For Fans is actually, I think it's saying here, it's created explicitly for adult entertainers by adult performers. You know, so it's, yeah, I mean, it basically, it's for those folks that want to put those things out there. WordPress, you can always create your own website. It's just, you know, and certainly you can make the basis of it educational, because people, there are a lot of folks that want to know. You may have a kink or a fetish or just something that you're into. It's just how you're wired. It may be a source of just displeasure for some, but it's also a source of curiosity and opportunity for education for many others. You can be a teacher and a notable content provider in that arena. Get you a WordPress site. You can go to free version, you can pay for it. One of the apps out there, it's a website as well as a smartphone app, is Recon. And it's a European cruising site for the kinky queer men. So that's where you get into some of the specific fetishes and sexual inclinations, such as leather, rubber, bondage, and various kinks. You can also get into dominant and submissive play, that type of thing. It's out there, and folks are going to be out there looking for you on that site. Another comparable site is FetLife, which I think is primarily been associated with the heterosexual community, but not exclusively. I think that, you know, it's certainly for everybody, but I think that certainly when I first heard about FetLife, it was mostly seen as a heterosexual site. But I think it's now opened up. And so, yeah, it says here that it's, okay, they say here, this long-running slutty haven is very queer and trans-friendly, and is home to a lot of straight kinksters, too. So, you know, I may have actually kind of gotten a very limited perspective on FetLife. So, you know, that's a place for you to check out, FetLife.com. Next site, RentMen is still up and running. RentBoy was the one that was raided by the feds in 2015 and got shut down, because that was like a way for sex workers to market themselves without having, you know, someone taking a huge cut of their money that they're earning. And I do believe the folks who are still, I think the founder or the CEO of RentBoy is still in jail or sentenced, if I'm not mistaken. And basically RentMen, oh, I didn't realize it was actually, it's not based in the U.S., so it's out of the reach of U.S. law. But, you know, it's there. It's there for you to access if you want to access a professional sex worker who's local. You know, RentMen is an option for you. You have all the apps, the geo-based apps. Let's see here. They got Grindr, Scruff, Chappie. If you like them more of the burly and furry kind, you got a Growler. If you're interested exclusively in men of color, Noir, N-O-I-R, is a geo-based app as well, made for and by men of color, and the men who like them. There are, you know, different outlets out there. He also cites a ninth source, queer media outlets that are, you know, that still connect people. So, you know, he talks about The Advocate as one of those places where they have the articles and the comment sections talking about different aspects of sexuality. You have the discussion site, Reddit. It's more loosely regulated, as they say here. You know, very specific sex sites for queer men, you know, when you're on the hunt. So they have websites like asspig.com, Bareback Real Time, or BBRT. What are some other ones? BGC Chat or Live. I was never a BGC person. But yeah, a lot of those different websites that might speak to very specific sexual interests or different, you know, very specific types of men. And then last but not least, as I mentioned earlier with WordPress, launch your own site. Your tribe will find you. If you're speaking to them, they will find you. So they're out there. Look for your folk. But okay. So that's going to conclude the main topic. I feel like, as often the case, I've barely scratched the surface. So if you have something you want to add or bring some things to my attention that I may have missed, reach out at sexualhealingpod@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me at Dr. Pookie on Twitter. That's DrPookie. And I'm going to take a short break before coming back with the listener letters for the week. Okay, and I am back, and we are getting into some letters now from listeners. The first one is coming from, oh, I did not give this person a name. We'll just call this person, need a name of someone I don't know. Goodness, I'm thinking of all these names of people I know. We'll call this person Jeffrey. Okay, so Jeffrey says, I'm a 25-year-old grad student working on my doctorate in higher education and administration. I'm generally drawn to older men, daddy issues that I'm cool leaving unresolved. I love that. However, these men tend not to take me seriously because they are twice my age. I often get the, quote, what are we going to talk about, unquote, excuse, and the I'm not a sugar daddy and I'm not looking for a sugar baby comment. What can I do to get these guys to take me seriously? Okay, so Jeffrey, you know, this is a pretty age-old issue here. I was once you, where I was 19 dating guys twice my age. It can be challenging. I think persistence can pay off, you know, not stalking, but persistence. But also, you know, if there's something you find intriguing, you know, read the profile. If you're engaging with someone on an app or on a site, if they have a profile, use that as a jumping off point to start a conversation. You can make your sexual interest known, but maybe you don't lead with that as the hardcore open. You know, you kind of say, yeah, I'm intrigued and I like what I see. Now, you know, one of the things I used to say is, you know, I like what I see, but now I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's in the can, you know, what's deep down in there. Which sometimes worked, sometimes didn't. But yeah, I think that, Jeffrey, if you make it very clear that, yeah, I'm into you, and I know that you're older than me, but I'm more mature than you might think I am, perhaps. Certainly the fact that you're a doctoral student should play well. Although it didn't always work well for me, but it didn't hurt. You know, it conferred a certain amount of seriousness. But I think if you kind of approach them in a way that communicates that it's not you playing games, like you see his attractiveness, you're into it, that even though he might see himself as an old ass man, that might be just what you're looking for, and it turns you the hell on. That's what needs to be communicated. And you know, I would say persistence. You know, acting, you know, beginning with the end in mind. What do you want from this guy? Do you just want sex? Do you actually want to maybe forge a friendship? Do you want a relationship? What are you looking for? You got to begin with the end in mind. You know, even Franklin Covey and Stephen Covey's methods, they still apply even in sexual arena and dating. What's the objective here? You know, if you come across a guy in a profile and he's hot and it's turning your crank and you just like, ooh, the things I could do to you, you can start there, but you got to have someplace else to land. So you could make it clear up front, yeah, I'm sexually interested. Such that if we chat and you say, you know, would you be interested in stopping by this evening, or can I, you know, meet you? You're like, yeah, in a heartbeat. But I'm also interested in who you are as a person. So now that we both agree that, you know, sex is on the table, let's get to the rest of it. That's how I've approached it a lot of times. And that's with dating men that have been my age, that have been older than me, twice my age once upon a time, and even to this day. I will try to express my interest. And really, expressing interest is objectification in some form. But I try to be halfway respectable about it and not just treat somebody like a piece of meat. Because they are a person. So, yeah. That's about it. Okay. So, alrighty. So let's see here. So Jeffrey, let us know how that turns out. And, okay, I gotta put your name in there so I'll know what the name was initially. Alrighty, so the next message here is from Ricardo. And Ricardo writes that the mother of my child is blocking my attempts to spend time with our child. She will not even let me see him most of the time. She curses me out, and her mother and any other relatives around all curse me out. I'd rather not deal with their madness, but I do it to spend time with my son. The way I ended our relationship was trash, and I'll own that. Okay, good. However, I just want to be a father to our child. How can I make some headway in this relationship? I refuse to give up on my child, but I also do not want him to have to grow up in a war zone. Ricardo. Okay, so, Ricardo, I do think that you're of the right mindset here that you cannot allow these folks, whether it be your son's mother or her family, to run you off. If you want to be there, you need to be there and find a way to do that. I definitely understand that it can be really difficult because a lot of times when you have, you know, custody battles, visitation issues like this, it is because of residual issues from how the relationship ended in the first place. You know, whether it was, you know, fuckboy behavior where you basically came in, you know, chased the cat, caught the cat, you know, left the cat full, and out pops a baby later. And you just disappear, you ghost it, or, you know, you may have gotten her pregnant and just, you know, never, and just really acted like it wasn't a big deal, and all of a sudden you want to be a father to your son. You know, however that's being represented, the reality is you want to be an active co-parent. So I do believe that it's important for you to have a sit-down with your co-parent and just kind of ask her, like, what is it that you hope to accomplish by doing this, by keeping our child away from me? The reality is, you know, you said that you were trash when this ended, so this is part of your penance you're gonna have to pay. you fucked her over, so now she's going to fuck with you. And, you know, it's not right, but in her mind, for now, it's okay. Because now you're having to suffer and feel some of the stuff that she may have. At the very least, you're feeling badly. That's okay with her. So it's going to be really important for you to kind of put on a big boy draw, so to speak, and engage her in a conversation, hopefully outside of her family. They don't need to be all up in the Kool-Aid here. You must find a way to engage her in conversation outside of these folks, and particularly outside of her mama. You know, you reference her mother in particular. It makes sense. It's not a new story. So start there. Sit down with her and just ask her, like, hey, you know, here's what's really bothering me about this. I recognize that what I did was trash, and I understand there's some residual pain there for you. And I'm willing to work with you on that in as much as appropriate to help you move past that, because we have a child to raise. And do that one-on-one with her. And even, you know, and it's possible that you might say this in within earshot of other people. Don't be surprised if she kind of throws shade at you and acts a fool, because she might not be able to really answer in the affirmative, because the people around her are like, nah, fuck him. He ain't shit. That could be part of the issue. So pay your penance. You know, you acted like trash and now you're kind of getting treated like it. It's not right, but like I said, for her it's okay. But for your son, it's really destructive. Any child that has a parent that wants to be there and isn't allowed to be there, it's not a good situation. Unless that parent ain't worth a damn. There's some kids who would have been better off had their parents been gone. Just never really were around. Just not everybody's meant to be a parent. And I think, you know, some of those folks, they struggle. And they may not always struggle. So when they are able to get it together in return, you've got to be there for them then too. So perhaps your son's mother is currently struggling a bit, and she's leaning on the resources that she has and that she knows. And she might 5-10 years from now feel extremely stupid about the way she's acting now. Your job, though, is to do whatever you need to do to get your time. So if she's preventing you from seeing your child during, you know, the agreed upon times for visitation, if it's not a court order, then you need to get one. And if it is a court order, you need to collect the evidence to show that she's violating it. If it comes down to you basically suing for full physical custody, then perhaps that's what you need to do. Because if she's doing this, chances are she's seeing a lot of you potentially in her son. And you don't know whether she's able to move past that and raise him in love, or whether there might be some resentment there and she's not being the best mother she could be. It's hard to say. So I definitely want to encourage you to engage her as best you can. I want to applaud your efforts to be a practicing dad, to be engaged. It's really important. You know, I still don't have my own children, but I understand the allure of children and their little itty bitty faces and those little smiles and that unconditional love that they give you. They are just the cutest and happiest little people around. And so who wouldn't want to be in the midst of that? And there are a lot of us that miss out on that, men and women, for various reasons. But you are one of the guys that wants to be around. So you've got to find a way. If you got to take her to court and basically do supervised custody exchanges where, you know, you're not coming by the house on her turf where she gets to act a fool, that, you know, and you may have to wear your camera phone and basically record the experience. And, you know, chances are if they're acting that stupid, you won't even have to hide the camera. They're not going to be able to help themselves. They're going to act a fool. And you can take that into the judge and be like, "Judge, this is what happens when I come to pick up my son at the agreed upon time and hour. And am I going to say that every time I've walked in being as gracious as I was on this tape? No. But here are two or three incidences where I'm damn near being physically assaulted for daring to spend time with my child. That makes no damn sense to me." So being a parent is work, and I believe that you're going to have to work to be a parent here. Because she's not going to make it easy for you right now. And perhaps this is your way of really showing her that you can be counted on to be there for her. Because she made a heavy investment in carrying a child to term, you know, with you. Alrighty, so Ricardo, wishing you the very best. Drop us a line, let us know how it turns out. And that will conclude our letters for this week. If you got a letter, question, so on and so forth, feel free to send it to sexualhealingpod@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at Dr. Pookie, or on the show's Twitter feed, which is PodSexual. I primarily post promotional things there for the show, but I'll also put in, you know, some of the links to some of these materials as well. So subscribe wherever you feel most comfortable and reach out. I definitely look forward to hearing from you. All right, so we're going to take a short break before heading back in for the popular culture segment and closing out the show. All right, so the doc is back in the house, and we're going to get into the discussion, light discussion of popular culture. I can't keep up with everything going on out there, but there are some things that, you know, that are kind of on my windshield that I can see, and thought I'd, you know, share some things on it. The first thing I want to talk about is Pose, the wonderful show on FX. If you're not watching it, you are missing out. It's just phenomenal, and I am behind a week. Last week I didn't get a chance to watch the episode that just had a whole lot of people crying and fucked up, myself included. So if you've not seen last week's episode of Pose, which I believe aired on July 9th, you know, I'll try to remember to put in the spoiler timeline, but I don't know, y'all. It could be a little rough. But I'll try. But I'm going to talk about Pose for a couple of minutes here. So I didn't get to watch last night's episode of Pose. I started it, but I was just really kind of wrung out after last week's show with Candy. Lord, that was my girl. The bitch was crazy. I got to give it that. Angelica Ross, you are a phenomenal actor. I really appreciate your work on this show. And I really believe the episode was really well done. I was wondering how the episode was going to unfold. And I love the way that Ryan Murphy and Janet Mock and the crew wrote this episode and really carried it out. I have had Stephanie Mills' song, Never Knew Love Like This Before, in my head since I watched that, because I was just sitting there keeping the tears in check, but I was just quite jacked watching that. So the episode, I believe it opened in the ball, or with the host council or MC's council of the different balls. I think it was four or five of those gentlemen, and they were convening to talk about new categories. It opened in the ball with Candy doing her tribute to Madonna and voguing, and Pray Tell just coming for all her wig, her mascara, her lipstick, just snatched all of it. And I was just like, damn, you know, those two go at it, and it was just rough, and I was just like, shit, you know, because I just kind of, you know, you kind of saw Candy's, her decline coming, because she just could not find her place in the ball scene. And, you know, but it was, I did appreciate them saying, you know, but you walk face all the time and you snatch trophies all the time. Why are you tripping about trying to do something else. And her whole thing was, you know, word is getting out about us and the balls. And I want to be seen when the light is shown. I don't want to miss my opportunity to be seen and to have my narrative change. And so she was very adamant about that, and she kind of crashed the meeting of the Ball Council. And basically, you know, she had submitted a proposal to include a lip-syncing category, and Pray Tell was like, hail to the Nah. And the other members of the council were like, nope. And then Candy made her presence known. She was a very ferocious representative of the House of Ferocity. And it was a fine, just like, it was very much the essence of Candy, that fiery, fierce defiance, you know, that sister Peaches, that, you know, she's just that woman. There's a certain amount of strident anger there, and you find out in this episode where some of it came from. You find out where her aesthetic came from. I was looking at her mama and said, really, girl? Okay. You know, she took her mama and upscaled her a bit. You know, put a little more funk in the hair, and her beat was a little more beat than her mama's beat. And so it was very interesting, you know, and what I saw there with Candy was just a somewhat lost soul trying to find her way. I think if the balls had stayed closed, you know, if Madonna's Vogue had not blown up like it did, you know, all the Candies out there that, you know, weren't expert Voguers, they weren't able to pass all these different things and to be accepted. And I think in Candy's case, she was a beautiful woman. She had very, you know, lovely features. That beat was always on point. You know, the body was lovely despite the lack of curves. She, you know, and as she said at one point, she pulled the finest trade in, you know, the five boroughs. And, you know, and she could turn a trick if she needed to. And I felt like, you know, she was a lovely woman, and her spirit, you know, she was fiery, she was feisty. She wasn't rolling over for no damn body. And that's what I loved about her. And so the thing that always struck me is that her role within the ball was as a house mother, like truly a mother, because she was very clear, like, this my house, I'm responsible for my house, I'm going to make sure my babies are taken care of. And it is the thing that, you know, located her in a position that got her killed. You know, they said that, you know, being a house mother is really expensive, and it looked like they were in a very nice building, too. Unlike where Blanca and them living, where all the damn windows are broken and shit. You know, it looked like they had a nice place going, and I suspect that after Elektra came and raided the House of Ferocity, actually she did, and I think she took just the two boys, and then she built her group outside of them. And you know, the statement that being a house mother is really expensive, I just, as soon as they, you know, as Lulu said that, I just said, oh shit, you know. And then I was like, she turning tricks, because the poll wasn't quite getting it done, because you could just tell that she was getting more and more desperate for her, you know, for everything that she brings to the table to be seen and appreciated. And she just felt like she was being left behind. You know, that the ball culture was going to explode, and a lot of the people that she shepherded and helped support were going to pass her by. And that wasn't a thing of her being selfish, like, oh no, you ain't going to outdo me, as much as I got dreams too. So I'm happy to help y'all, but y'all, I need the world to see me when it's time. And that idea is so, it's so prevalent amongst a lot of us. We all have our gifts and those things that we bring, and sometimes the value of them is not glaringly obvious. But we do have our gifts, and we need to honor them and nurture them. And and really develop them to their full capacity. Because that's part of why we're here, is to discover who we are, discover what we bring, and to bring it into service and the enlightenment and uplifting of others. Now, that can be a tall order for some. Totally get that. But that is the core part of our purpose of life. That's, you know, that's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, self-actualization. Just the higher end stuff, you know, you got your food and your clothes and your security and you got love, you know, and then you just keep working your way up the chain until really it's all about that last 20% of your life that's really, really tough to come by. You know, the 80-20 principle, the Pareto principle. That first 80% certainly is not just like easy and a given, but getting to a place in your life where you're secure and you have the time and the space to pursue other interests that are really that spice of life kind of thing. That's huge privilege. And that's what she was working toward. But first, she had to make sure that the lower end needs were met. Housing is expensive as hell in New York City, even back in the early 90s. So she was, you know, turning tricks at a notorious hotel. And, you know, the ladies, you know, Lulu went over to Blanca and said, "Girl, I need to talk to you. Something's not right. You know, Candy has missed her last two shifts at the club. Haven't heard from her." And they go over to the hotel. And at that point, I said, "Oh, Lord, she gone." Because this was like right after the opening, like where she gets cursed out by Pray Tell at the ball for doing a Madonna thing and looking crazy. Although she looked tough in the suit. The bustier looked crazy, but she looked tough in the suit. And then we had the opening credits, and then she crashed the council meeting, and then they're back at the balls, and that's when, you know, they're like, she's missing. And they ultimately find out that she was, in fact, killed by a John. We don't know who it was. I'm hoping that we somehow find out who it was. You know, I think it would be a missed opportunity to get into the psychology of a man who would murder a trans woman. Whether it was this thing of her getting too familiar and really being a woman for him, to him, and him not being able to be okay with that because his head was fucked up. You know, I don't know exactly why she was killed. It wasn't a hardcore bloodbath. It looks like she was just beaten to death, which is a horrible way to die. And I just, you know, when I saw her body, I just said, "Oh shit, I cannot deal. I cannot deal." But I dealt. And the episode was just so well done. I hollered when it's so funny. Bob and I were sitting there watching the episode, and when they first show Candy in the casket, I was like, My mom was like, "Oh, she looks good." And I was like, "That's very auntie." And then when they said, "Girl, she looking like somebody's Aunt Carol. We can't let people see her like this." And I was like, "That is exactly, she does look like Aunt Carol." That wig, the beat was crazy. I said, "Ooh," because she had that ashy look going on. And I said, "No." But, you know, you got to have a girl paint a girl for her last viewing. You can't have, some, you know, and I appreciated that the mortician, you know, did the work on her free of charge, and that they showed that other side of Candy where she greeted him every time she came in by name and expressed her gratitude, despite the episode a couple of weeks ago where she and Lulu were at the memorial for somebody being catty bitches, you know, and I love that other side of her, because she was this complex person that was very tough, you know, her name was Peaches, so to speak. But we also got to see her Aunt Sarah when she formed that house, and, you know, sweet thing, all those personas, those four women, we got to see them. Now, obviously she was not of mixed race, but I would say that perhaps you can make the argument that her being trans was that quote unquote mixing, so to speak, of not just this one thing, but this other thing as well. And not really feeling like she belonged anywhere in particular, but she was always fighting to make her home. And so, and it was just interesting because, of course, Peaches is on my mind because, you know, the concert I went to see Michele and Dagiocello, and she did an encore with four women, and her rendition was very, it's very haunting, but she played us. I'm still a little salty. She played us. The heifer did four women and sang everything up to the line of "My name is Peaches." She didn't give us that. She introduced the band again and they promptly exited the stage. That was shade. That was hurtful shade. But it is what it is. I'm gonna try to be bold, be brave, and move on. But I was hurt. But again, this idea of the four women, it was just, I kept hearing that. And then when they did, you know, the lip syncing montage with her, the fantasy, she was fabulous. And I just say, yeah, she would have worked that category. Maybe not one every night, but it was interesting. And the thing that struck me is like, okay, if they're paying the girls well to lip sync downtown, why weren't you downtown? Was it because you were a dark-skinned trans woman? Or was it because you were a dark-skinned woman? Or was it because you were a black woman? Like, what kept her out of downtown? I don't know the drag performer history back in the day. I wasn't in New York in the early 90s, so I don't know. By the time I got there to visit in like 95, I believe, you know, it was fairly integrated. And, you know, there were some old legendary girls around, certainly in the ball culture, but I don't know about the drag scene. I don't know. But it was interesting that that wasn't an avenue for her. So I have to think that she either didn't feel accepted or she had made her home in the ball scene and she wanted to bring her best to the ball. Maybe that's why she wasn't in the drag scene, because she's like, that's not my scene. This is my house. I found this lovely thing out there in the world that I want to share with y'all hoes up in my house. I'm a house mother. Mother's supposed to better bring good shit home. I don't know. But it was, it just, I spent most of the episode holding back tears. I felt like her one-on-ones that she did with all the people were just hers. The first one with Pray Tell, just, oh, I love the colorism debate that they introduced there. They were able to bring that in, and it wasn't heavy-handed. Like, 'cause I always was like, okay, this conflict between you two went beyond just mere shade. Like, this was like, Pray Tell, what is your issue with Candy? You know, you could always see there was a respect there. Like, he's like, bitch, I respect you. 'Cause he'd be like, you's a resilient bitch. You a brave bitch. You know, you an unstoppable bitch. All, you know, I respect your ingenuity. But no, you know, and he always cut her down in the balls, like, just, you know, sister pulling out hammers and shit and blade and just knives. And I was like, oh my God, you know, you could tell that she was fighting very hard for something, because the reality is a lot of the things that she represented were frowned upon, not just in the balls, but in the world in general. Couldn't be too dark. As a woman, you couldn't be too loud. Couldn't be too strong. Couldn't be too present. And she really did embody that pain, but she came at you with some love. I didn't like the way they did Lil Poppy back in the, you know, last season. But that, you know, that was interesting, because also Lulu had her reaction to her, and I was like, what the fuck is Lulu's problem? When she's like, you know, snatching the shit off the girl, and you could hear her introspective thoughts, and like, you stole all my look, that's my brooch, and this and that. And I'm just like, oh. I was like, you didn't dress her. You know, it was just strange. Like, so Pray Tell's conversation with her, where he said, you represent all the things in myself that I have to hide when I'm everywhere else other than the ball scene. Because he is loud. He is a darker skinned man. He is undeniably in your face. You know, he can't hide that. And so I just thought it was, very well done. I love the way Billy Porter did that. I love that they had that moment where they were able to kind of lock eyes and really be like, okay, girl, you know, where she was like, okay, Prey, I see you. She's like, and I love you and I forgive you. You know, I think she knew what it was, but she still had to say, you know, bitch, you never said that I was beautiful. And he's like, of course you're fucking beautiful. You know, I don't think he quite said that, but it was inferred from my perspective. He's like, of course you're beautiful. I thought it went without saying. He's like, but your ass was crazy. You were paying the ass. You know, so it was just, it was wonderful. Her conversation with Blanca, it was just, it just brought up that whole idea of, yes, we cut and snipe at one another, but when it's time to circle, bitches close ranks. And I loved just that sense of community. It breaks my heart to see the infighting and the cattiness in the shade, but that's just, I guess, a pressure release valve for all of us, because we catch all the crap and, you know, we usually spray and vomit it on the ones we love the most, unfortunately. Because I guess we always know that no matter what we do, they'll always love us. But, you know, it shouldn't be the way, it shouldn't be that we treat them the worst. Because they do love us, we should treat them the best. But when that attachment is not secure, you're going to test. It's like a child who's not sure their parents love them. They're going to test and test and test until they're satisfied that, yeah, I'm loved. Her conversation with Lulu just struck me as really odd. Where Lulu's like, you never were nice to me. You know, you were a thieving hoe, blah, 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 blah. And it was just like, I was like, what is y'all's relationship about? Like, I probably need to watch that again. I mean, I kind of, my emotional reaction to it changed over the course of their conversation. But between her snatching the shit off and her initial comments to Candy outside, I was just like, bitch, you loved her? Are you sure? Like, why did you love her? I don't understand. And then it, you know, and she just kind of said, you were never nice to me. And I said, really? Like, okay. I was like, but I don't know. I mean, obviously, Candy and Blanca are two very different types of house mothers, where Blanca, you know, with Angel, it's like, girl, you're going to be a mother one day, and you'll be a damn good one. And she kind of leans on her and actually allowed her to be her mother when she needed her, when she was negotiating whether she was going to take the AZT. And Angel, you know, earned her stripes there. She'll be an awesome house mother when it's her time. and so I don't know if she and Lulu had that. But obviously, Candy was a hard bitch. They, you know, they said it. She was a hard bitch, but it's how she grew up. I mean, when Electric Caminera said, there's some people in here eating the food. I was like, that was so white woman, Electra. I love it. She's like, there are people here that are clearly uninvited, and they are eating the food. And I was sitting there, I yelled out, like, Miss Former Indochine. That's right up your alley. Deal with the asses. But I think she knew who they were. I really felt like Electra knew those are her parents. And I think that's a very tender spot for Electra. You know, because this is one of her daughters, former daughter, you know. And I know that she meant something to Electra in as much as Electra can love her babies. I mean, and they've kind of rounded Electra out where you do kind of see, okay, there is a person in there. It's not just some carnivorous beast. There is a person in there, and she's complex. And, you know, she is that, you know, that striking, shady, bitchy woman that we all know and love. We all got one in our lives. But when it's time, she steps up and, you know, She's earned enough chips with the folks, even the ones that can't stand her ass most of the time, that they will rally around her. So it was fascinating to see Candy's parents. I loved the fact that her father was quick to kind of acknowledge her pronouns. The fact that however they named Candy when she got here, he recognized that that name no longer fit. It never did. That he bought at the time, you know, his baby, I'll just say his baby, the dollhouse, because his baby asked for it. I was just sitting there like, oh my God, Black Daddy. Just like, oh, Black Daddy. Now, Daddy's, Lord, when the parents were standing up there at that casket and his daddy's ass was just spread out all over the place, I said, Lord, okay, is that what Candy had coming? Or was she going to have mama's ass? I don't know. But if she had daddy's ass, she was going to be in trouble in her later years. Because daddy had a lot of ass and it was spread out. But okay, let me leave that old man alone. But when I saw Candy's mother and just her Candy, what kind of name is that? And I said, ooh, that's a mama. You know, I was just like, yep. From the hair to them lips and just that kind of name is Candy. I said, oh, that's her mama. I was like, yeah. I said, and those two did not get along. But they actually seem to get along better than you would think. Like, mama really couldn't process it. She just couldn't understand it. She's like, this is my son, and I'm not having it. And Candy's father was like, this is my baby. And did you, she, at a certain point, you know, very early on in that conversation with Blanca, and you know, and I just love that Blanca was able to welcome them in, because that was really important. I feel like we often hear about how our trans siblings are just kind of thrown to the wind. Not everyone is completely disowned by their family. Not everyone is over in Potter's Field, you know, in a very no anonymous, no name burial. Not everyone met that fate. There were some folks that their parents didn't fully understand, and they maybe have, you know, left and created a family for themselves in the ball scene, but they may have still had some degree of contact with their family of origin. And so I thought it was really cool that they showed that element in the show. And the fact that it's not all this downtrodden story, that there is love for our trans siblings and gender nonconforming siblings outside of the balls and outside of just the LGBTQ community. There's love out there, somewhere, with somebody. Maybe you don't know who loves you, but you are loved out there. So I really love that point. The conversation with her mother, I was just like, wow, you know, the dad, I don't know how much contact Candy had. Clearly there was alienation because Angel did not think they would come. Certainly didn't want to claim the body, but they got there. And I love that somehow, some way, it was communicated to them, this is when it's going down, so we hope to see you. The thing that struck me is that there was not a conversation. I loved her conversation with Angel, where she was like, bitch, go strong, go hard. Make them tell you no. And you might just be the first one to get through this shit. What I loved was that she, you know, she encouraged her to be bold and go after it. Because Angel's in that delicate space. She doesn't know. She has the goods, but she doesn't know if she can get there, because her life, she's been told she don't fit. Nobody really wants her. She's being proven wrong in all the best ways that you'd like to see. And so that was really cool. The thing that I thought was interesting is that she did not have a direct conversation with Elektra. It was just fascinating. So I don't know if she gonna be haunting Elektra's ass. I don't know. It's like, she might haunt her. I don't know at this point. But again, just loved it. And of course the lip sync, I was sitting there just broke down. Broke the hell down. I love that song by Stephanie, first of all. You know, Stephanie's stuff from the, you know, late 80s into the 90s was phenomenal. So just the song was like, it was so appropriate. She never knew love like that before because all them people showed up for her. Even the trade was there. You know, it's like the pallbearers. You could tell she had fucked all the pallbearers, you know, and I loved it. And all those things that are kind of frowned upon and kind of discredited were on display and valued. And that's what I loved about the way that episode was done. And I think on a larger scale, I love the fact that there are trans and gender nonconforming voices in the creative team. And those voices are showing up in the nuances. Because I don't know how many episodes we're going to get this season, but they're packing in a lot of shit. And it doesn't feel like it's stuffed. I mean, just the simple nod with, you know, doing this 4 or 5 minute set piece where she says goodbye and seeing her dad in the back right before that door closed. I was just like, oh my God. I was barely holding it together. And I just, you know, I just kept saying, Candy, go. I love Candy. Her ass was crazy as fuck. I love that. So she, you know, she'll be missed, but we will be seeing her on American Horror Story, is my understanding. I don't know. She might still have a little celestial appearance later on this season. One can never be sure. Perhaps she will talk to, Miss Elektra about what's hanging out in her closet, or about who's hanging out in her closet. But okay. And I'll also say this again, you know, if you've not really gotten a flavor for who the actor Angelica Ross is, I cannot stress enough that you need to go over to the Eat, Pray, Thought podcast, hosted by Savoy Jefferson, I believe is his last name. If it's not Jefferson Savoy, please don't read me. I appreciate that, but it's Eat, Pray, Thought, and the thought is THOT. It's fabulous podcast, tickles me to no end. But I think the last episode of his season, either his second or third season, was an interview with Angelica Ross. They cut up. I just love Angelica's spirit and just learning about what she's up to. It just blew my mind, because we don't know who people are. We see one side of them in performative spaces, and we don't know what the rest of their story is. I've even seen that recently on some podcasts where they've been interviewing, you know, some of the adult performers, and you find out like, oh yeah, this person's studying screenwriting, this person's studying architecture, oh, this person cooks, this person is a creative director, you know, like is retiring from porn to become a creative director at an advertising agency. You know, this person can actually sing, all these different things. And, you know, I think that being a sex worker has gotten such a bad rap. And that's part of that sex negativity that is kind of running through the earlier part of the show. Just because somebody's fucking on camera, it doesn't make it all the different from you fucking in person behind closed doors in your house. It's really no different. The only thing is they're just giving you an invitation to check it out. It shouldn't mean that they're somehow this undesirable person or they have no other talents or skills. To me, it's not so much like, oh, you can do something else, as much as like, oh, is that okay, that's your other gift. It's like, you know, that's one of your other things. Okay, so you're gonna put that into play now. All right. You know, to see adult performers doing art and choreography and all kinds of stuff, it's just really cool. So, you know, I say all that to say that, you know, you might see this loud queen cutting up at the club every weekend, but what is that queen up to Monday through Friday? What are they doing for a check? What are they working on to give them a second, third, or fourth check that's coming in every month? You know, what gifts or talents are they bringing to bear? Because we all got them. You know, it's like this idea of the sonder, S-O-N-D-E-R, this idea that we encounter people who are strangers, but they have this whole other complex life going on that we don't know about, and it intersects with ours in some way. Whether it's just us sharing time or space together, that could be the extent of it. But, you know, the curious thing is one of the upcoming guests on the show did not realize he was my neighbor. Like, I kept looking at him like, it's just weird that there are two of you that look similar, but you don't look the same in person. It was just, you know. And I said, oh my gosh, you are him. Wow. So, you know, one of the future guests is a neighbor. You know, so it's like, all right, this is wild. So, you know, you just don't know. So one thing I'll talk about, you know, are you loving you hard? Are you supporting your fellow people out there? Ask the questions. Get to know who they are. It's not a big ask. Okay, we are already over 2 hours, so I'm going to move this baby forward. I got, is it two more topics before I close? Yes. Okay, although neither of them is particularly short. The next one coming up, we're going to get a little heavy now, as if that review of Pose was not heavy. I want to talk about a certain Edward Buck, who is a relatively wealthy Democratic donor, booster, so to speak, in the L.A. area, in particular West Hollywood. He is the man who was present at the overdose deaths of two different black gay men. The first death that he was attached to was... Jamel Moore, who was a 26-year-old sex worker, who died at Ed Buck's West Hollywood apartment, which looked like it was more of his playpen, his flop house, on July 27, 2017. So coming up on a year ago that this happened, coming up on 2 years ago that this happened, and a year after it happened, just minus one day, they determined that there wasn't sufficient evidence to prosecute Ed Buck. Even though he was present, there were diaries from Jamel Moore talking about his relationship and, you know, with Ed Buck and the fact that Ed Buck was going to be the death of him because he got him hooked on crystal meth. And I don't know if he said he was injecting him, but, you know, Moore died of an overdose of crystal meth, and you know, it was just tragic, and it was kind of horrifying, and so there were no charges brought. Took them a little under a day, less than a year, to decide not to do anything. The community was really in an uproar when it first happened. They've been in one since locally. Jasmine Canick has been, you know, keeping her boot on the neck of the LAPD and the LA County prosecutor. And also, you know, in the black LGBT, the black LGBTQ podcasting sphere, one of the notable places of a boot on the neck, has been the Superman at the Here For It podcast. Every week he has been hashtag arrest Ed Buck, and you know, and it's, I just felt like, you know, we need to talk about this case, especially when less than a year and a half later, a second man was found in Ed Buck's apartment, 55-year-old Timothy Dean, was found on January 7th, and he had died from an overdose of crystal methamphetamine. The word on the street was, it's fetish. Okay, sex positivity again. But this was not healthy because people are dying. So it's not particularly sex positive. The word on the street was, the rumors, allegedly, were that Ed's thing was all about watching men get high on crystal and, I guess, perform sexually. There was some sort of revenge porn thing that's been added to the Jamel Moore case because it's been sent to a federal prosecutor now, and they're you know, figuring out whether they're going to press charges there. And basically what's being said now is that he injected or watched Jamel Moore inject himself with crystal meth and then recorded him masturbating. And he then used that later. I don't know if he threatened to put that out there, like put it on Pornhub or something like that, or on X Videos or MyVidster or whatever it was, or whether I think I read that he used it as a, you know, he would inject more on subsequent visits and have him masturbate while he was watching himself masturbate while he was high. It, just really crazy. So, I mean, clearly it was working for Ed Buck because he's now killed two men and he's been spotted with others. And he's pretty well-known at this point, pretty notoriously so. So getting back to the legalities of this thing, Jamel Moore's mother has filed a wrongful death lawsuit, a civil suit against Ed Buck, as well as the L.A. County District Attorney. What's her name? Last name is Lacey. What is girl's first name? Jackie Lacey, a sister. I believe she's our first black female district attorney in LA County, which is an elected office, I believe. And she also has a, she's also named the deputy district attorney, Craig Hum. And that lawsuit is pending. In the meantime, the original complaint against Ed Buck has been amended. And they're now trying to get it to be a federal case. And that's where the charges for revenge porn with the whole video thing. I'm not quite sure what exactly how that worked. Need to do a little more work, a little more reading on that. But they also have added a sex trafficking charge because Ed Buck paid for the ticket that flew Jamel out. And the day Jamel arrived, he died in Ed Buck's apartment. Apparently surrounded by Ed Buck and tons of drug paraphernalia. So clearly something going on there. And so, you know, and then the second gentleman, Timothy Dean, who was a retired adult film star, who went by the name, I can't think of his name. I can see him. Oh, I cannot think of his name. But was it Ass Slayer? Something like that. Ass Master? I can't. I think that was him. I don't remember. But, you know, He had a career going at one point, and he had since retired. Mr. Dean was 55, and he also died on January 7th of this year. So the homicide team for LAPD has actually put together all their evidence, and they've presented their case for criminal charges against Ed Buck. They submitted them to the DA, Jackie Lacey, and they are mulling over whether they're going to file charges against Ed Buck in the death of Timothy Dean at this point. And I don't know what's going to happen with the Jamel Moore case locally, but they're hoping to get a federal petition. But, you know, one murder charge will do. If we can't get anything else, one will do. So, yeah, and I think I bring all this up because, again, looking at sex-positive behavior, party and play, you know, the injection or usage of drugs, in particular injection drugs, usually uppers, to enhance sexual play is pretty common. It has destroyed a lot of lives. It's taken a lot of lives. If you kind of want to see what it has done to some people, there's a documentary out there called Chem Sex, Chemsex. It is a foreign documentary. It was not, I don't think it was made here. It was certainly based in the UK, I would think. Very fascinating, very tough to watch at times, because you're seeing guys literally shoot up and just fuck their brains out, and it's kind of like, wow. And I mean, that's one of the things that I struggle to be sex positive about, particularly when the use of crystal meth is not an inherently healthy thing. Obviously, most of the folks that are partying and playing are consenting to do it because they're injecting themselves. However, we don't know what amount of coercion might be involved there, what amount of peer pressure may be involved, because, you know, you're with someone and this is their thing and you want to please your partner. I don't know. But I don't know if I can say that the PNP, as it's often called, is a sex positive and healthy, health-affirming behavior. Pattern of behavior. I don't know. I've seen it destroy lives of people that I don't know and people that I know and love dearly. You know, meth is no joke. So I would say, you know, to and the other thing is that meth has often been seen as a white man's thing, and it's not just that. Those are the cases we hear about. Those are the folks that it's kind of geared toward and portrayed. And part of that is just, you know, the racial inequality within LGBTQ communities. You know, men of color, people of color, they're not the first priority. So not only are we largely invisible in a lot of the media representations, but even things like this, I mean, we're slowly being seen more as a face of HIV. But it's still weird, because when a lot of the, you know, now I think the majority of gay men serial converting is by far black men. So now you're seeing a little more visibility and targeting of programs for prevention and treatment toward black men. But once upon a time, the bulk of the money went to organizations that were not servicing us, or that were not speaking to us. So it's just part of that thing. And the reality is, because of history, because of the ways that we've grown up and socialized, so on and so forth, we're not always hearing what we need to hear in terms of protecting ourselves and being as healthy as possible. So that's part of that checking in on one another, being your brother's keeper, being your sister's keeper, taking care of your siblings. So I want to move on to next news item. Actually, in speaking of this idea of death, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the noodles and beef case, with this gentleman who is in a closed polyamorous relationship with four pups, I believe, four or five. And he was based in San Francisco and Chicago. He's moved around the country with his pups. And it's definitely a master-slave relationship that this gentleman has with his pups. And one of them died from complications of injecting silicone into his genitals. And it's kind of come to light that there may have been some degree of coercion, because the contract that his pup signed basically said that it was at his master's discretion, that he modified his body to his master's satisfaction. And so all these guys are walking around with these huge genitals that are just cartoonishly large. And it's at least erotic for their master. I don't know how they individually feel about it, but I believe all of them except maybe one or two The original ones, I don't think they have it. You know, but yeah, this guy Noodles and Beef, you know, he moved to Seattle. There was some real sketchy emotional stuff going on when his pup Jack separated from him, you know, kind of left the kennel, so to speak, and you know his former master went on this smear campaign. It was just really very unbecoming. It was not a good look at all. So all that shit went down. It was crazy, but you know, Jack died. His family, Jack had about $250,000 that was in his name that his master inherited, because Jack signed all of his assets over to his master, and the money was actually intended for Jack to take care of his brother, who I believe may be on the autistic spectrum or maybe has cerebral palsy. There's some, I can't remember exactly what the health issue is there. I think it may have been a congenital thing that came with birth. But, you know, they had this very unsettling news feature that they done on this where Noodles and Beef and one of his pups met with Jack's family, I believe in Australia or in the U.S., because Jack was from Australia. And when he learned that, you know, Jack had all this money, he basically was like, "Are you serious?" And then he refused to give the money to his family. So Noodles and Beef has, he kind of went off the radar, shut his blog down, you know, put up this tribute that had all these links to all Jack's favorite books and music and all this stuff on the website, and it was basically an Amazon affiliate link. So if people bought this stuff, you know, Noodles and Beef was making money. It was quite messy, quite shady. And so I bring all this up because, once again, we have someone potentially taking advantage of folks. And you know, Noodles and Beef has been linked to up to 3 deaths now. And so he resurfaced this past week on his way to an event. I forget where it was, but I don't know if it was just him. I'm sure he traveled with one or two of his pups, because I suspect he needs some backup. But yeah, he resurfaced and people are reading him the riot act. The shit has been crazy. So folks are like, whoop his ass, you know. And so I bring this up to just point out that there are people out there doing questionable things. There are compacts that you can make with someone in a master-slave relationship. But understand who you're signing over your power to, who you're giving control of your body to. I don't fully understand the nature of those relationships because I've not been in one. However, I can read, and I read the agreement, you know, or the parts of it that were available. And it was very clear that the decision to inject silicone was likely not the slaves. And so, yeah, beware of, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had out there. There's a lot of pleasure to be had. And I wish for you to have it all. But please, please, please do it as safely as possible. Mind your space. Mind your place. Okay? Not everyone is your friend. Next topic. Still heavy. 21, 23, 29, 26. Those are the number of confirmed murders of transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming siblings in the United States that were killed between 2015 up to 2018. 2017 was the peak at 29 deaths. This year, we are now, as of the end of June, I'll put it this way, we've had 11 deaths of our trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming siblings, 11 of them. All of them have been black trans women. And I feel like as a black man, I'm part of that struggle, because these are my sisters, these are my siblings. They are a part of me, I'm a part of them. And I'm not able to participate in affirming their lives in ways that everyone else, you know, in ways that maybe they can for one another. But the least I can do is to keep their names out there. So I'm going to be keeping an eye on this and updating you on our sisters that are losing their lives far too soon. The sisters that have lost their lives this year are Dana Martin, 31, of Montgomery, Alabama. Jaslyn Ware of Memphis, Tennessee. I forgot to get her age, but I believe she was pretty young. Ashanti Carmen of Prince George's County, Maryland. Claire Legato of Cleveland, Ohio. I feel raggedy. I need to get these ages. Next time I'll have them. Malaysia Booker. I've not been able to watch the video of her initially being attacked. It was too much. I saw it out the corner of my eye, and I said, what the fuck is going on? And just somebody getting just pounded. It was too much. It just broke my heart. She was 23. They found her dead in Dallas, Texas. Michelle Tamika Washington, 40 years of age, of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She actually exceeded the average life expectancy of a black trans woman. I believe it's 36, something like that. Paris Cameron, 20, of Detroit, Michigan. Chanel Lindsay, 26, Dallas, Texas. Chanel Scurlock, 23, of Lumberton, North Carolina. Zoe Spears, 23, of Fairmont Heights, Maryland. And our most recent loss, Brooklyn Lindsay, 32 years of age, in Kansas City, Missouri. So these 11 women have been killed by somebody. Their deaths are part of this sex negativity. I assume they were killed by men. That would be most likely. I can't say that all of these women were sex workers. I doubt all of them were. I seriously doubt that, because there are sisters out there that are just get up and go to work kind of girls, and they are looking for love and to be loved just like anybody else. They got a man at home. They got a relationship they're cultivating. And sometimes these men may legitimately not know. And instead of just saying, okay, this is not for me, they somehow take it as an affront and kill these women. Because they've been quote-unquote tricked. Yeah, I'm not buying that in a lot of cases. It's not to say that every trans woman is up front as soon as she meets a man, like, you know, I don't feel like that's necessary. It's the same way when you know, people are like, well, we need to know. I was like, do you? Because you interact with men and you might like big dick, and you interact with the guy and you don't know whether the dick is big. Or it could be big and he don't know what the fuck he's doing with it. Now, you might be frustrated, but do you beat the shit out of him? Or do you just say, oh, and move on? Now, you might curse him out, but do you actually, like, literally get violent? Or do you just walk the fuck away? That whole trope about, oh, these women are tricking these men and they're just traumatized. They just lash out. Well, bullshit. Just admit you like some dick and you might like some titties with it. It's okay. It could be a curious combination. I'm just saying. It might be a yuck to you, but it's a yum, yum, yum to somebody else, because there are plenty of ladies living quite well as sex workers. And they are trans. They could be pre-op, post-op, on hormones, not on hormones. It's a spectrum biologically out there. And all these folks are getting by. Some because they want to be a sex worker, some because it is a means of survival. And it's unfortunate that our siblings have to survive in that way, selling their bodies when they have other gifts that they could share with us. There were two other siblings out there that have died as well. They were not African American, and they were both Latinx. And the first one was Joanna Medina. She was 25, and she died in El Paso at a hospital. And she died a couple hours after she was released from ICE custody. The assumed cause of her death was severe health complications that weren't treated while she was in detention. And the official cause of death is pending an autopsy. So this is someone that was held by ICE who was ill, and whatever treatment she got wasn't sufficient. And she's gone. You have Leilene Polanco Extravaganza from the House of Extravaganza. She was a 27-year-old woman. She was found dead in her cell at Rikers Island jail on June 7th. She was arrested on misdemeanor assault charges in April. She got into a dispute with a taxi driver over a $31 and I think it was 50 cent taxi bill, and the taxi driver claimed that she bit him on the nose or the cheek or something like that. So our sister was arrested, charged with misdemeanor assault, and she was in jail because she couldn't post the $500 bail. Now, she had been in there, I believe this incident, yeah, it was in April. She had been in Rikers for about 2 months, and one morning they found her in her cell, non-responsive. And the exact cause of her death is undetermined at this time. So, if you are a watcher of Pose, you have, you know, oh gosh, what was her name? There was the woman, she was portrayed by Peppermint. She talked about her story and how a trick tried to jack her, and she was whooping his ass, and the police rolled up, and, you know, he pulled out that white, you know, that's just white male privilege, said that she tricked him and was trying to roll him. And she went to jail and got pimped out by a guard. You know, we don't know what happened to Leilene. We don't know. But I bring this up because we all have a responsibility to one another to make sure that we're okay. That we're loving one another enough to make sure that we understand what we're getting up for the next day. And that there's some value in who we are. Yeah, I'm going to move on. Another one that really bugs me, the Eric Garner case. We just found out the other day that the U.S. Department of Justice declined to bring federal charges against Officer Daniel Pantaleo. This is the gentleman, this is the officer, NYPD officer, who placed Eric Garner in a chokehold that triggered an asthma attack that killed him. This was the incident where you could hear him saying, "I can't breathe," and he died on the pavement out in front of a store. They were attempting to arrest him for selling Lucy's or single cigarettes without a permit and a license and all those things in New York. The attorneys in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice believe that charges could have been pursued. However, the Attorney General, William Barr, the same one that has been shielding 45 and all of his foolishness and fuckery of late, particularly in the Mueller report and all that, he agreed with federal prosecutors in Brooklyn that federal charges shouldn't be filed. So basically, this is done. I don't remember if Polanco is still working or not. Pantaleo is still working. What I can say is I do believe that the chokehold that he applied at the time was not consistent with NYPD policy, with subduing a suspect. I don't know what word to use there. What I want to say is, you know, every time we hear about things like this, where police are not truly being held accountable for their actions, when it seems like their behavior might be excessive and reflective of brutality, you might be inclined to think that your life doesn't matter, as a black person, as a black man, a black woman, a black same gender loving man, woman, a black transgender nonconforming, gender queer, the whole spectrum. I just want to remind you that your life does matter. If you don't hear that from anybody else on a daily, you heard it from me. Your life matters. And I just want to make sure and remind you to practice that self-care. When I talked about loving on yourself hard, you know, and making sure that you're getting your sleep, drinking your water, eating well, getting your exercise, minding your business, but taking care of those closest to you that you love, that are around you. Because the toxicity in our society is becoming more apparent every day. It's, you know, and we have to remain vigilant in uplifting one another, because we don't know what's going on with the person next to you. We don't know. And the power of a smile or a hello is, it's significant, and you've got to give it a chance, to show up. So we got to show up for one another as best we can. So I want to end on a more positive note, because I think I've been quite Debbie the Downer the last 45 minutes. The Lion King is coming Friday in the theaters. Queen Bee is doing a thing. She's definitely one of the major draws. I don't know when I'm going to catch it, you know. I suspect that it was something Mom and I were going to check out, but I don't know when she's going to be ready to hit the streets. Yeah, she coughs. But I do want to say that while I know I'm late as hell, I finally got a chance to sit down and watch Homecoming on Netflix, and my mind was blown. Her hustle, utmost respect for Beyonce, her hustle and her dedication to her craft. To think that it took the better part of a year to put that show on, and what she went through to give birth and get her body back together, and to see someone who brings what she does to the stage, to see the naked vulnerability of her saying, I don't know if I'm going to get it back. I done gave birth to twins up in this piece. I don't know if I'm going to get my body back. And for her to get it back, and to put on that show, I was floored. I mean, I watched it on YouTube and you know, Beachella, and took it in and said, damn, the scale and the scope of it, and the fact that that band didn't miss a fucking beat, and the dancers were just on it, including that thick sister. I saw you, sister. You didn't miss shit. And the fact that you were in that space. Because a lot of times, folks don't want to allow you in that space, even though you've earned the right to be there. I was happy to see you there, sister. And everybody up on that stage. The first black woman to headline. And she brought it hard. And half the folks, they didn't know what the fuck she was doing. But those of us that did, we knew. And we appreciated and loved you for it. So Queen Bee, please carry on, carry on, carry on. All right. And speaking of the icon, legend debate, I will just say that Beyonce's making her case for her place in the musical pantheon. She's making her case for it. She ain't dead yet, and she's still got a lot of work ahead of her. So just let her be. Appreciate what she's bringing, because she's a notable figure in the cultural zeitgeist. Whether you want to call her an icon, give her legendary status already, That's conversation and chit-chat. Appreciate what she's bringing. Because she brought a lot that night. I'm still awed. So in closing, reach out. Love to hear from you, particularly those of you that have sent in letters and made comments that I may have responded to on the show. Happy to hear from you. Once again, sexualhealingpod@gmail.com, or you can reach me at Dr. Pookie on Twitter, DocTorPookie. I am a proud member of the hashtag Pods by QPOC family, as well as the hashtag Pods in Color family. So, always looking to be in dialogue with you. If you have an idea for the show, love to hear from you. If you'd like to come on the show, reach out. Let a brother know. But certainly, thank you for hanging in there with me. This show ran awfully long. I thought it might be an hour and 15 minutes, and I was sadly mistaken. Because before editing, it were 2 hours and 42 minutes. So, I'll cut a little bit, but there's not much to cut, I don't think. But yeah, but if you have passionate topic out there that you want to talk about, reach out to a brother. I'm here. But in the meantime, keep it sexual, keep it healing. Be a blessing out there in the streets as well as in the sheets, and try not to be a curse any damn place. Check us out on Instagram. I try to do what I can for the gram, Sexual Healing Pod, and also on Twitter at Pod Sexual, which is where I do a lot of promotional work for the show. On Facebook as well, Sexual Healing Podcast from top to bottom. Would love to hear from you. Reach out. So for the time being, I'm going to get up out of here because I'm still kind of hoarse. I'm dry. I'm sweaty. It's hot. Damn it. I need a shower. I just need a shower. That's it. So y'all have a good week. Take care of yourselves out there. Drink that water. Don't let that black crack. Keep it lovely and limber. All right, y'all. Be well.